We have a lot of parents in our congregation. So many of you, in lots of shapes and forms, so many of you have experienced the dynamics of a family as we get near the due date of a child. Things can begin to get tricky in terms of having everything organized, getting the nursery ready, making sure that everything is just right for when the time comes. And when Beth was about 8 months pregnant with our daughter in 2013, around August, I had the responsibility to carry a bit more of my own weight around the house. And with that, there were a few things that were done less efficiently as before, we shall say. The laundry, the dishes, the cooking, getting the kids where they were supposed to be, bathing sometimes. One night, one of many, I was just no help. And we didn't have it together, and I was sent out and was responsible for finding food. And being the hunter-gatherer that I am, I decided that we needed Chinese. And from our front porch to the entrance of the small Chinese place just down the road from our house in Allgood, it's 4 minutes away. It's only a bit concerning that I have that drive timed. So I called it in, I waited a few moments, I drove the 4 minutes to pick up our dinner. I get the food back in the car, and my phone rings. I figured it was a pregnancy craving call, right? We'd had a few of those, that I needed to make one more stop before I went back home. But when I picked up the phone, answered the phone, the only thing I heard was my 9-year-old scream, "There's a rat!" And then he hung up. Nothing else. Oh, my. And then my phone rings again, and there's more screaming. It was really unintelligible and very loud. And we found out that day that Beth was not a fan of rodents, especially in the house. So, of course, I head home, and I step out of the car with our dinner. And as I walk toward the front door, I can hear the screaming before I even hit the front porch. So I took a deep breath, and I walked in the house. And I turn the corner, and I see my two boys standing on the kitchen table. And I said, "What are you guys doing up there?" And from the other side of the house, from our bedroom, comes this terrible scream. "I told them to get there. What took you so long?" And I'm thinking, it was only 4 minutes. And so I walk into the bedroom, and I find my wife, 3 weeks from her due date, running in place, jumping up and down on the bed, sweating in her belly, which she carried right in front of us, is literally bouncing up and down. And I said, "Honey, sit down. I was only gone 4 minutes. That was too long. There is a mouse under this bed." "Well, he told me it was a rat. Is it a rat or a mouse?" "It doesn't matter. Get it out of here." "Well, we don't have any traps. Let me just go and get one." "Don't you dare leave this house. You get this thing out of here." "Well, how am I supposed to do that?" "Figure it out." Okay. So in a rush, all I can think to do is put on a pair of winter gloves in August, and I grab a broom and a plastic grocery bag, and I hate to admit this, but a BB gun for protection. That's absolutely true. And honestly, I don't really enjoy this either. You know, I've gone a lot of my life without being bitten by a rodent, and I was just fine with that. But I get down on my hands and knees with my broom in one hand and the bag in the other, and I look under the bed, and the first thing I see is a mouse on the leg of the bed staring me straight in the face. And it was all I could do not to lose it. And so I try to scoop the thing into the bag, but of course it runs off the bed and runs under my arm, and you know. There was more screaming and more running in place. I said, "Where did it go?" "Out the door." "Well, I know that. Where?" "In the coat closet." "Okay, calm down." That didn't help. And the coat closet's just off our bedroom, and it's also where we keep our luggage. And so I slowly opened the door, and I carefully removed the pieces of luggage that I saw, and I barricaded the two doorways in that hallway. And I emptied out the closet, and in the corner after I was empty, I saw our little friend in the back corner of the closet. So I took my broom and my bag, and it ran out again, but this time there's no place for it to go. And in one of the proudest moments of my life as a grown man, I caught that thing with my hands. And then I panicked, and I ran toward the back door screaming at my boys to get off the table and open the door. And I threw it to its freedom. So Merry Christmas from the Wheelers. This is a fun, rather crazy, and frankly, it's an embarrassing story to tell, and I assure you that I had permission to do so. And I'm sure that many of you over the past several weeks have been balancing quite a bit. This time of year can be an exciting one, with money spent and gifts to wrap, plans to make and bags to pack. And as these weeks have gone by, there always seems to be a sense, at least to our family, that we're never going to make it, that we just won't be able to finish what we need to finish. And then Christmas Day comes, and it's a mixture of happiness and relief and exhaustion. And I know also that for some of you here, this season might be a difficult one. And we can speak of what we always speak about at this time of year when it comes to managing difficult issues. But we must name more, must do more than just name terms like grief and loneliness and depression. When that's all that we say, we do acknowledge a reality, but it limits the comfort that we might offer. This season calls us to follow our prayer of may all who are troubled and grieving be blessed with practical actions, kind words, hugs, a card, our presence, and allow all that we do to perhaps speak louder than the words we say. And to those of you here who might be struggling this morning, this season, I would carefully encourage you to remember that the good news of this incarnation of God in this way through his birth is that the endless love of God through Jesus has now come to us at our level. We are met in our current state exactly where we are by a God who has expressed love through reality. And this is the beginning that we celebrate today. And no matter where we are, worn out from the demanding, hectic anxieties of this season, or if we can't just seem to find any joy these days, if our hearts hurt this year, wherever we are, the significance of this day, of tomorrow, doesn't change. And sure, it can be obscured, but it's still there, waiting for us and encouraging us to come nearer. Just as it did for a group of men so long ago who were focused on their work of keeping their sheep safe one evening. Something keeps calling us to come and take a closer look, drawing us to see and to experience and to worship what's taken place. And when I hear this Christmas story, the story that's been told and retold for hundreds and hundreds of years, I see that it's relatable even to us today. Some of these larger experiences and emotions are familiar to us, because this story is full of hustle and bustle. First, a teenage girl is approached, overwhelmed by an angel, a messenger direct from God, who tells her that not only is she going to have a baby, even though she's a virgin, but that this baby is God incarnate. It might be a bit heavier a burden than finding that perfect gift for the next person on our list. Then her fiancé, who finds out his wife-to-be is pregnant, decides to treat Mary with love and respect, despite confusions and, I'm sure, deep feelings of hurt and betrayal and anger and resentment, and despite the cultural expectations of the day. He chooses not to bring more harm to her, but to protect her, until he is approached by a heavenly force, telling him that this woman is a favored woman of God and carrying God's son. That seems to be a bit more difficult than opening a gift and seeing that it wasn't really the color we were hoping for. Then there's the 70-mile trip to Bethlehem with the pregnant Mary over rough terrain to make sure they can be counted for taxes. That sounds fun. A bit more frustrating, perhaps, than standing in the long lines to see the lights at Opryland Hotel. Then they arrive and find that there's no place to stay, no safe, clean place for a baby to be born. So someone sends them to what would most likely be a stable or a cave, a place of darkness and uncertainty, perhaps a bit more difficult than facing a flight delay. And then those shepherds minding their business at night, and as the scripture tells us, another majestic and heavenly interruption brings them to an unexpected place, an improbable experience. But all this improbability doesn't begin with this story. And to look at the experiences of the Jewish people as we read in the Old Testament is to observe this sort of yo-yo civilization. A continued story of a people being rescued by God and following away and rescued again over and over and over again. And now we're in a time of Roman occupation where life is once again interrupted and freedom is dominated by a forced allegiance to a faraway earthly power. There's so much happening. So much hustle and bustle. But now we find ourselves here. In the dark of night. A cool desert air enveloping a family with a new baby that they are at once grateful for and astounded by. And perhaps through the exhaustion of this experience, the baby finds sleep and they find time for quiet. A time to reflect on just what in heaven's name has happened here. And quiet, careful footsteps of strangers come close to pay homage to their hours-old newborn. But outside of this place, life still goes on. The worries of the world, conflict, anger, fear, these matters that we all know too well. But here, just here, in the quiet of this moment, there is an experience of the confounding nature and presence of God. It's not something to always be understood, but a presence that can set our hearts to a holy sense of calm, if only for a few moments. I began today by telling you this very silly, true story of a mouse in our house. It was very loud and crazy and anxious, as you heard. But it's a family story that I've told many times, but I also remember later in that day, as the day was winding down, when we were finally able to sit down and think about what had happened, to reflect on the craziness, we started laughing and laughing. The absurdity of this whole thing hit us, and we found these warm, wonderful, positive emotions that we still hold on to. I do hope that you've had the opportunity to celebrate and reflect upon the wonderful, majestic, holy absurdity of this season. I hope there have been times over the past week when you've had the chance to reflect on what all this means. Perhaps maybe during a Sunday service when we've seen our young people sing and decorate the sanctuary, or while we've taken in beautiful music and recounted the Christmas story. A moment in your car or at your desk, just maybe, we found the opportunity to stop and really set our hearts toward the meaning of these days. We will always have things to do. Our task list will never end. But every now and then, we find a chance to pause, to breathe, to think, to set aside distractions, and to experience God's great, graceful presence. And I pray that for all of us, these next couple of days will provide us an opportunity to do just that. When we find such a time, that this wonderful story that leads to the reality of an eternal peace and a lasting comfort and unending joy can be our focus. May we all set aside the time to experience this silent night. May God provide us a few moments of peace and quiet to take away our distractions so we can see that the story of this baby is the beginning of the story of our salvation.